This is Tim O'Brien with O'Reilly Media.
I spoke with Carl Malamud today about his grassroots effort to earn the nomination for the Office of Public Printer in the Government Printing Office. Carl Malamud has been a transparency advocate since the 1980s, and his nonprofit, public.resource.org, published 32.4 million primary legal documents in 2008. In this interview, I talked to Carl about his platform and plans, which you can read about at yeswescan.org. That's yeswescan, scan as in scanner, .org.
My name is Carl Malamud. I'm the president and CEO of public.resource.org. We're a nonprofit organization that puts government information on the internet.
Okay, and I got to you through a website that you just launched called yeswescan.org. That's yeswescan, as in scanner. It's a site that you made to promote the idea of you being the public printer of the United States.
Well, the public printer of the United States is the head of the Government Printing Office. Government Printing Office, GPO, is an agency of the federal government that was started in 1861. It opened its doors the day that Abraham Lincoln was inaugurated, and they serve all three branches of government. They are the default official printer of the United States. And what that means is they publish all the official journals of government, things like the Congressional Record and the Federal Register. They do all the big print jobs, census, IRS, tax forms, all that kind of stuff.
So there would be something like the government RSS feed, if you would.
Well, it's a publisher of the United States is actually what the public printer of the United States is. It used to be a print job only, but that has evolved over time to be all forms of publishing. So they do video, they do print, it's the largest, one of the largest printing plants in the world. They have 1.5 million square feet of printing facilities, just a half a dozen blocks from the Capitol and Union Station.
So you've been focused on getting data out of the government for about 20 years?
At least 20, certainly professionally for 20 years.
What has convinced you that now is the time to go work inside of the government? I mean, what's the main change that you've seen?
Well, I have always worked partially inside, partially outside. I actually started my career working for the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve System. I spent a decade in Washington being a Beltway bandit, doing consulting to a large number of government agencies. And I've always been dedicated to putting government information on particularly the internet, but publishing and making this information available more widely. Why now? Well, we have Barack Obama has become president of the United States, and it seems like there is at least a possibility that the people appointing this position might think it's time for change.
Trying to lobby for this job is not a new thing. You talk about someone on your site who has a great name, by the way, Augustus E. Geigengeck, who worked for the GPO during the FDR administration. He lobbied for the job, and he actually got it.
So Augustus Geigengeck was a working printer. He actually ran the printing operation for Stars and Stripes during WW1. He ran a large printing operation for the Army, was what you would call kind of a regular leather apron man, a real working printer, right? Blue collar. And when FDR was elected, Augustus was a New York resident, and he was really inspired, and he wanted to become public printer of the United States, but he didn't know FDR. And so he went and spoke at a couple of Rotary clubs and asked everybody to send him the endorsements. And they all sent him these letters of endorsement, and he bound them up and sent them to FDR. He knew a guy that worked in the White House who knew somebody, and they sent it in, and FDR looked over the book and said, well, this is our man. And Gus actually became one of the greatest public printers ever. He served for a dozen years, helped pioneer photo page composition and a lot of modern typesetting, was able to ramp up GPO and make it meet all the World War II printing needs, which were like, you know, tremendous. You can imagine the number of food stamps they had to print and ration coupons and things like that. And so I looked at Gus's background and thought to myself, well, what the hell? Let's see if we can put together a nomination book like Geigengeck did and send it to the White House and, you know, see if I can get the job.
So you've got some pretty big names behind you. Lawrence Lessig, Tim O'Reilly, Tim Bray, Tim Wu. All these people are pretty well known. Ellen Miller of the Sunlight Foundation is on this list as well. What's the next steps?
Okay, well, so like, you know, we are all, of course, totally impressed by these names, people like Larry Lessig and Paul Vixie and those folks. But of course, let's be honest, these names don't necessarily mean anything in Washington, D.C. So what I'm trying to do here with this campaign is two things. The most important thing is to bring the vision and the issues up to the forefront so we can begin talking about things like are U.S. passports dangerous for American citizens, which I think they are. Should we be publishing government information more broadly? And that's really the point of this exercise. Needless to say, if I could be nominated and then confirmed by the Senate and a miracle were to happen and I could spend some time at the government printing office, that would be wonderful. So the other thing we're asking is if people want to endorse me for the job or endorse the platform more generally, simply to blog it or comment on a blog or tweet it, and we will go out and harvest all this information and like Dusk Egan-Gack, put it together in a book and print that book off. Obviously, there'll be a free version available for anybody who wants, but we'll print the book and send it to the White House and say, you know, here's another vision for the government printing office that you ought to consider.
Everybody's talking about how the government's going to start publishing feeds and publishing all this data. But if you look at the problem, there's lots of different departments. There's lots of different, you know, nameless little agencies that no one even knows about that have really critical data. How do we not get to the point where we've got 50,000 different systems publishing 50,000 different formats? Is that something that you would be working to solve?
I like the idea of 50,000 systems with 50,000 formats, as long as they're all like based on open standards and a consensus on using things like open source and how to do things. So I think the answer is not centralization. I think the answer is not to say we need a central conduit, a place where all publishing for the United States happens. I think this is very much a process of education, of putting together a Gov 2.0 that is a much broader source of how things should happen in government, how government should publish and relate to citizens. And ultimately, this becomes a people problem, not a technology problem. And it becomes a question of how does the United States of America attract really good technical people to come work and do public service and work in all these 170 different administrative entities that the executive branch has. Because you're not going to solve this with like a directive, right? The president is not going to solve this problem. He may lead the way, but ultimately we have to bring thousands of people into government service to do things differently.
The word printing is in the name of the office. It's the GPO. But if you look at what you've done in the past few years, it's been focused on getting data in an electronic format. Now, as far as I can see, the Office of Management and Budget, the OMB, sets a lot of the IT policy. I think if you look at their online presence, they talk about something like a CIO council, where all of the CIOs in all of the various federal departments come together to set their policy. Could you talk a little bit about the overlap between the GPO and the OMB?
So the government printing office is the default printer button for the United States of America. It's different than the kind of overall IT policy, which is a huge, big problem, and I wouldn't want that job because I don't know how to solve it. But when it comes to this issue of how the government publishes and communicates, a lot of that is printing. And I'll grant you that a lot of my background has been publishing information on the internet, but I also spent a decade doing trade press. I've written 8 books. I've worked in newsrooms, and the government is going to continue printing both high volume things and things that have to be done overnight, like the congressional record, and some of that may go digital, but there's still going to be a large need for industrial style printing for the United States government, as you can imagine, for a long time. And so I think one of the keys is going to be learning how to mix these different things together and how to move GPO into this new world that's going to have very high-end, you know, beautiful books and beautiful printing and this bulk commodity work, but then kind of this very core mission of publishing literally hundreds of millions of pages every year on the internet. And I think that is a very industrial kind of facility and when you're at the scale of the United States government. And I think that's going to be a unique role that GPO is going to be able to play for a long time.
Where does the government's responsibility stop? There was a discussion on the Open House Project list this morning about, I think the stimulus bill requires that there be an RSS feed, preferably an Atom feed, for the spending. And then someone came back and said, if they really cared about the citizens, they'd have a targeted email alert. Some people responded and said, no, it's the government's job to give us the data. It really is our job to make it friendly. What is the role of the government?
If you looked at the detailed position papers that I submitted to the presidential transition effort, I submitted a series of five papers. I outlined three levels of access that I think GPO and the rest of the government needs to provide. Bulk data must be available because we always know on the internet there's somebody smarter than we are, right? And so by making the bulk data available, we stimulate innovation. We encourage people that are smarter than we are to figure out how to make things better. So we have to do that. Bulk data must be available. The next level up is the bulk data also has to be available on the government servers with an API on top. So just as you can embed a YouTube video on your website, you should be able to embed a congressional bill or the status of a congressional bill or updates to a congressional bill or change control over one out of an API. And that's level number two. But I also think the government has an obligation to do a retail presence in which they build some form of an official site, which is aimed at the end users. Now, maybe that site is based on a contest in which we ask widget developers to come up with good ideas and the government uses those. So I'm not convinced government, you know, has to like solve all problems on its own. But government should operate at all three levels. It should provide the bulk data, it should provide an API, and then it should provide some form of a retail presence on top of that.
Could you briefly talk about the security risk that you previously mentioned with the passports?
Well, I think it's pretty clear on passports that if somebody is an American citizen and has a United States passport in their pocket, and I've seen a variety of videos on YouTube and a variety of serious studies that show somebody driving by, getting close to you, can see that you have a passport in your pocket and read that RFID chip. And certainly, if not read it out of your pocket, certainly once that passport is open. I know there was a lot of work within the security apparatus looking at secure documents and how to do them. But frankly, I think the United States passport, the way it's currently formulated, is a mistake. And we need to figure out a better way to do secure documents that don't have these admitted privacy issues, but also the very simple security issues of you know, if you're looking at 100 people and you happen to be a terrorist and those 100 people are in front of you, with the way we do the American passport, you can tell which of those people are American citizens. And we know that's not a good thing today. One of the proposals I have made, and this would obviously be subject to the United States Congress and the president and other people thinking about these issues. But personally, what I would do is I would ask Bruce Schneier to form a blue ribbon commission and come up with a better way of doing this, because I'm not convinced that the way we do passports and other secure documents makes any sense.
You did something with the California code. I think you got them to publish the entire code in a set of CDs. Is that true?
We have public.resource.org, which is a nonprofit I work with, has put a large number of primary legal documents online. In 2008, we put 32.4 million pages of documents online. Among other things, we have convinced the state of Oregon to waive copyright on their Oregon state statutes. We published the California code of regulations, the administrative regulations, which copyright is claimed by the state, but we don't think that's valid. And I think the most important thing we've done in that area is we published for all 50 states all the public safety codes, the building codes, electrical, fire, plumbing, all the day-to-day regulations that any contractor or plumber or homeowner or realtor has to obey, and which until we did this were just not available. You had to pay $100 to buy the California building code, and that just didn't seem right. that we would be locking up our laws behind a cash register.
Is there any constitutional basis to actually challenge that? I mean, if a state claims copyright on a set of laws and regulations, is it within their authority to even do that?
We do not believe that the states have the authority to claim copyright over statutes. There is a long line of Supreme Court opinions ranging all the way back to Wheaton v. Peters. There is a recent Fifth Circuit decision, ZEC, which explicitly states that things like building codes are not subject to copyright once they are published. We began publishing this information on July 4th of 2008. That was the California codes. On Labor Day, September 1st of 2008, we went national and did all 50 states. We have not been sued. We have not had any letters of protest and no nasty phone calls. And so I think what we're doing is clearly within the law. And we thought very carefully before publishing this information, but it seemed like it was very important to make it available.
Over the last few weeks, I've been following your Twitters. You've been scanning in nonprofit IRS tax returns. Is that true?
Yes, actually, we didn't scan them. We purchased 746 DVDs from the IRS. That's all the exempt organization tax returns from 2002 to 2007. We ripped all the DVDs, took the 50 million TIFF images and turned them into 3 million PDF documents and put them up on our server. Google is in the process of crawling this information. Our goal is very simple. It's accountability. If you run a nonprofit, your tax returns are open for public inspection, and we want it so that when you search for your local nonprofit, you're going to get their web page coming up on Google as hit number one, but hit number two ought to be their tax return, so you know what they did with their money.
Part of Google's book scanning service is to actually create XML documents from all of those page images. Is that the same technology?
What we are doing is, as Larry Lessig would say, manumitting the data, which means simply making it available. So Google did not have access to the TIFF images that are these 50 million pages of tax returns. By making them available to Google and everybody else, Google, in fact, can take that and run it the next step up using Tesseract and Ocropus and do the OCR, do the XML table ingestion, run it through their search engines, and make this information available to people. But our job is with this particular data set has simply been making it available. Nobody had spent the 10 grand to order the 750 DVDs and then take the time to rip all those 50 million TIFF images and slap them up on a server. And that's what we did.
And you did it in Perl or Python? I think I remember you talking about Perl on your
My script that takes the so the way it works is you get 60,000 TIFF images on a DVD, and every X DVDs, you know, per month, like every dozen, there's an index file, and the index file says, you know, these five TIFF images make up the following tax return. And so I wrote a very hacky program in Perl that used all sorts of open source software, like EXIFTool and the PDF Lib and LibTIFF, and simply stitched all this stuff together. I wouldn't call it a program. It was more like a script.
Okay, well, thanks for talking to us. If you are interested in endorsing Carl for the Office of Public Printer of the United States, if you're interested in having someone in that position who knows what LibTIFF and Perl is, you can go to yeswescan.org. Thanks for talking to us.
Great. Thank you very much.
This has been a production of O'Reilly Media. For news that matters, go to www.oreilly.com.